and welcome to episode number 10 of Research VR Podcast, where we dig deep into virtual reality with cognitive science and economic research. For those of you joining us for the first time, Research VR is a weekly podcast dedicated to breaking down years of virtual reality research into a digestible form and discussing the current economic trends of the industries around the world. In today's episode, we're talking about a hot issue in virtual reality community, time dilation. I think a lot of people are actually very excited to hear about this just because they've been seeing this happen time and time again in just random first-time user experiences where suddenly, you know, people take off their HMDs and they're like, how long was I in there for? And someone says, you know, 30 minutes. And they're like, whoa, I thought I was in there for like 10 minutes. So there's a lot of cool anecdotal stories out there that really pushed us to dig deep into this topic. Today we're joined here by Mr. Christoph Izdebski.
Good evening.
And Mr. Peter Lekov.
Hi there.
Cool. What have you guys read so far about time perception and dilation?
Well, I mean, there are the quite obvious things, right? That, I mean, everyone now who has also listened to our podcast should know that there are some things that you can manipulate, especially if you have cancer and you put some kind of VR on the head of the person, right? Mm-hmm. Or you have some kind of pain. But the question is, how does it work, right?
Mm-hmm. And in terms of talking about it, let's lay out some groundwork. How about that? Let's talk about a few terminologies that will probably be used throughout the episode. So in terms of time, there's two times that we're talking about. One is the absolute time, or that we're going to just call real time. That's, you know, the time that's going to be on the clock and the time that you actually perceive. We'll call that perceptive time, excuse me. Perceive time, sure. And Christoph, what's the difference between time dilation and time perception?
So time perception is the bigger topic, is the top of the hierarchy, the big concept that has few parts to it. Now, time dilation is just one of the phenomena that you can observe in the topic of time perception. And then time dilation itself refers to this moment when you perceive the time differently from the real time. So it's not the time itself, but the duration of certain events, or the, for example, duration of you being in virtual reality.
Yeah. So that obviously time perception, it's not a new topic that's been researched into, but it is something that we know very little about, but is really interesting because of all the implications, even beyond virtual reality.
Even though the first laws about perceiving time were developed in 19th century.
That's right. There's even interesting things with, I mean, time perception really ties in into memory and attention somewhat. And that we're going to dedicate a whole episode to memory and attention definitely later on, in terms of even spatial memory, grid cells, place cells, and kind of how they actually play in well with time as well. Like, time is really linked with our idea of place and grid cells. There's one really interesting research that came out just last year. We do also want to mention that everything that we talk about today will be included in the show notes, our notes, and how we structure the entire episode, and we'll also have all the references down below. So you can do your own research. Yeah.
And don't forget, our dear listeners, and we also recently, you know, decided that doing a podcast is not enough, so we also blog usually about all the topics that we are, you know, so excited about to speak here, also on Medium, which we will also cross-link.
That's right. We started a publication on Medium where sometimes it's not exactly about what we talk about in the podcast, but also just shorter topics that we've just been thinking about or wanting to write about. So we throw those up there just for easier consumption, just because it's, you know, text rather than listening to a podcast. So let's talk about neuroanatomy just for a second. We won't concentrate too much on the anatomy, because I know not too many, you know, developers are interested in that. But in terms of time perception, we really don't know much about where in your brain it's completely dedicated to. We do have some clues, however, where the internal clock is used to for time durations in terms of like the seconds to minutes range is linked to the dopamine function in the basal ganglia, while temporal memory and attentional mechanisms appear to be linked with acetylcholine function in the frontal cortex. That was just one of the research papers that came out a couple of years ago. There's other papers talking about it being a mix of frontal cortex, hippocampus linked about to memory, basal ganglia, and cerebellum. So these are very deep ingrained systems within our brain, because it's not a recent phenomenon, like in terms of evolution, that time perception in an organism exists. Like, you can imagine that almost every organism has some kind of a time perception. So it's very old, and it's very involved within the brain. So, and even, like I said, the range of the time perception changes. So short duration is handled by a different part of your brain than other. But for our purposes, I think we can just talk about the time perception and dilation in general.
Yes. And we will also focus on the time perception and time dilation rather from up to a few hours perspective instead of longer time, just so that we avoid misunderstandings or some more complex topics such as circadian systems that we will touch upon. But we really focus on things that can happen to you and your potential target group or your users, that they will be playing for 10 minutes or 2 hours.
Yes, exactly. And by the way, if you've just started listening and you're wondering why exactly is this related to me as I'm a scientist or VR developer, well, both your subject and also your user of your application are in a certain way, you know, experiencing what you have created. And as we will learn today, by designing it in the right way, you can either shorten or extend their perception, or maybe even do something else to it.
Okay, let's move to another pill of theory.
Yay!
Now, as mentioned before, there are a few aspects of time perception. And following Block and Gruber, we can list four of them. One is simultaneity, which means that there can be two stimuli happening very close to each other. So, for example, for our auditory stimuli, that would be 2-3 milliseconds. And if those stimuli happen close enough to each other, they will be treated as one event, as one stimulus. Now, the second point is successiveness. So if this time is longer, then you will perceive events as happening one after each other, as two different events.
Actually, there's, but as a side note, cool research again from David Eagle, I remember him talking about it. He found that it's 80 milliseconds actually is this span of the difference between something happening simultaneously, is at least that's how you perceive it, rather than successive. So if two dots are presented to you within those 80 milliseconds, or in a way that you see them, you actually perceive them to be together or after each other, to the point that you can actually get like a sound. You train a person to like press a button and then a sound appears, and then if you do it within that 80 milliseconds, they will think that sound is happening before they press the button, and they will like 100% like bet on it even to doing so.
Due to how the brain is working and the different senses have slightly different routes for each type of sense, and then for multisensory integration, so few senses at the same time, you have different timings for the simultaneity and successiveness.
And even the distance between like the nerves. So like the reason why this whole thing exists is because like someone touching you in your at your hand rather than touching you on your foot, instinctively you think you feel your hand faster than you would feel your foot, but they're actually just the same. And that's because of this 80 millisecond span that your brain thinks as of now. So everything that happens within that 80 milliseconds is now to you. You know, it doesn't want this discrepancy. So that's for the short burst.
Also, we speak here particularly about the conscious perception, right? So, I mean, you might have reflexes that are faster than those 80 milliseconds, but you perceive it. So this, especially the perception of it is the key word here.
But those were just the aspects that are connected to time perception, but not directly connected to time dilation. The aspect that is the source, so to say, of time dilation is duration judgment. So basically, the question, how long was a certain event? Now, in here, we have two types or two ways you can ask about it or think about it. The first one is called in literature experience time or prospective paradigm, which basically means that before an event or during an event, you will think about how long is it, so that you will put some attention to it and you will sort of think about how long is this event or how much time has passed already, which by default is connecting this to attentional model or attentional resources, which we will reference to a bit later. Now, the second method is called remembered or retrospective paradigm, which basically is an opposite of the first paradigm. So you don't think about timings and duration during the experience or during an event, but you will be asked about it or think about it after an event.
So, I mean, that really asking someone, you know, how long did you think you were in there is very different than asking him before to remember, you know, remember how long this is going to take, or remember, keep a track of time as you're doing this.
So now don't be distracted by the word remember, because in the situation when you ask someone before or during the experience to pay attention to time, it's different than if you just ask him after the event, because after the event you will specifically refer to his memory. So just in case that you want to think about it later or actually research a bit on your own, you need to make a differentiation here between attention and remembering or memory.
I mean, we all know it from interrogations, right? As long as no one asks you precisely to, you know, try to actually map a situation in your memory and remember it precisely afterwards,
witnesses.
The witnesses, yes. The witnesses usually have some mixed stories to tell. I mean, the assassination of Kennedy. Some heard 3 shots, some heard 5 shots, some didn't hear any shots because it's a stress situation, right?
That is an entire topic. I actually love to talk about it, and especially when it comes to... So memory is very, very fallible, and it's just to say for a few seconds, every time you recall a memory, you actually start to reconstruct it again, and by reconstructing it, certain details will change. So every time you access that memory, things are actually going to change and you're going to have to fill in the details. So memory has a lot of issues, and every memory you have, it essentially is somewhat false and intrinsically biased. But I'm going to keep that I'm going to keep that juicy subject for a later episode.
Okay, so coming back to our theory pill, there is one more topic that is not directly related to time dilation, but it's also important and may have some influence, which is a thing that we already mentioned before, which is circadian system. The idea here is that every organism, or a bit more developed organism, has a certain system to track the time or to track the point of the day. And then in many organisms, if not all, this time, you're tracking where are you in the 24-hour cycle. So this is highly important because it controls things like digestion or certain hormones or body temperature or the sleep and wake cycle. So for example, it is important when you think about thinking that you played for 3 hours, but instead when you look at the real time afterwards, it was 12 hours. And you didn't notice that because you didn't get any cues because you got hungry, or you didn't get any cues because you didn't feel cold during this time and things like that. So as said before, there was also already a significant study in 19th century that ended up with Virodot's law that was created in 1868. And what it says is that if you consider time duration judgment from seconds to years, for this range, the same law holds. And it says that judgments for relatively short intervals are lengthened. So you overestimate how long they are. And judgments for relatively long intervals are just mildly underestimated.
So you're saying shorter time spans, like within minutes, like a 5 to 10 minutes or hours,
yes,
can be overestimated rather than looking at years when they're underestimated.
Yes. So, and the additional thing is that on the short time, short intervals, you are greatly overestimating, while on the long intervals, you're just a bit underestimating. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, this all just goes back to memory and how you're structuring memory in terms of recency and the longer something is within your long-term memory, let's say that's not even that accessible, the shorter the time interval actually gets. Let's talk about modulating time perception. So what are so all these anecdotal evidence is out there, you know, and what type of research actually is there for people looking at the actual time dilation that happens between perceived time and real time?
Now, we can't here it is important to remember about those two ways of asking about the duration judgment, and that is the prospective duration, so the one when you know that you will be asked, so to say, and the retrospective duration when you don't know that you will be asked and you just judge it afterwards. Now, let's speak first about the methods for prospective duration. The most important thing here is the cognitive load. So the more things you need to do, the more things you need to deal with during the experience, the more distorted your time perception is going to be.
Right. And that all has to do all with attention. So the more load, the more effort you put on the attention, the more things you need to kind of have in your working memory, you know, your short, mm-hmm. short-term memory span, let's call it, the more taxing it is on just your perception of time. And I think that ties in with memory again, because you're actually starting to encode more things into your memory. That's what, again, I keep talking about this guy a lot, but he just does such interesting and varied research. David Eagleman, where he was like, yeah, if you throw someone off of, you know, the top of the roof, they'll think they experience time for a lot longer when they're falling. But that's because their mm-hmm. body is the cognitive load on their body at that moment is so high that it's trying to encode all of this memory of experiencing that. And therefore, if you have more memory of something, then you will, like, if you can actually recall more memory about that subject or that event, then you will think that that felt longer than it was.
Now, at this point, it's actually interesting to mention another point. I wanted to talk about it a little later, but the topic is called judgment immediacy. So basically, how soon are you asked about the length of the experience? Mm-hmm. So looking at the example that you gave, so jumping off the building, if you're asked just after the experience, you will perceive it much more accurately than if you're asked about it 2 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you can make the argument that how are you actually recalling that event multiple times throughout those 2 years, or is it something you recall once?
That is also true.
Like I said, recalling something always changes that event. So yes.
Well, not only recalling. I mean, the thing is, if you're trying to remember these events, the longer it is in the past, the harder it is actually to find the time correlation between them. So it is not in case that we perceive time as fluently as, you know, one would imagine. I mean, this is also what we're talking right now about, but that means that retrospectively, the memories that I have are not particularly in the right order, or if they are in the right order, because I perceive some things longer and some things shorter, it might also completely change the way I perceive them. Because a boring ride, you know, if I perceive it boring, I don't have enough memories. Mm-hmm. If it was very exciting and I was falling all the time, you know, or something was happening, I have more memories. But the longer it is and the more I change the memory about it, so by recalling it or like having more memories, the more it kind of morphs into this whole, yeah, I have some past, mm-hmm. but...
Mm. So that what you mentioned actually is really interesting about boring, and that is all about arousal. So what we've been seeing in terms of the research with arousal, people actually have done some good studies about music and how that changes our time perception. Mm-hmm. One thing that really stood out to me is, you know, the saying goes, time flies when you're having fun. In a way, sure, the actual saying kind of holds, but in research, there was one particular paper that kind of discounted it in terms of music. So they were looking at major they had the same music, but changed it into a major tone, a minor tone, and atonal. So, you know, they played the music the same key with the same instruments, just with the actual tonality change. You know, major, minor, and atonal is without any of those. So that was supposed to be neutral. They actually found out, they found that the time dilation, you know, the difference between real time and perceived time was the longest when the music was major. And when the key is, when key of music is usually in major key, people perceive it to be like happy and nice and calming. And when it's minor, it's usually sad and solemn. So in minor key, yeah. So minor key, that, so there's a lot of more research done on the major minor thing in terms of like subjective happiness and arousal. But major key music was perceived to be the longest. Minor key was a little bit shorter, and atonal was actually closest to the real time of the actual music. So if you're actually happy and involved in the music, you perceive that to be a lot longer. And there's a lot more research actually done on that as well. So there's a wonderful article. If you don't want to read the actual research papers, there's this one article in Nautilus magazine that I love reading, that just because they talk about science in a very nice and narrative way. They talk about how when music is played in a bar, like slow music actually was played in a bar, then people want to linger more and order another round. Then they say similarly, consumers spend 38% more time in a grocery store when the background music is slow. And a third factor, which is really interesting, is familiarity of the music. Shoppers perceived longer shopping times when they're familiar with the background music in the store, but actually spend more time shopping when the music is novel. So all these factors, actually even about music, change your time perception. And so if you're playing a major key music in a shopping mall that is familiar, you actually will probably perceive that to be a lot longer, that waiting time to be a lot longer. And you can even think about this in a phone thing. You know, if you put on hold and you're playing music, do you want that to be major or minor key or atonal? And so the research points to like, hey, play like some kind of atonal, new age type of music where they don't really perceive, it kind of takes away their regular perception of that time. Which was pretty interesting, I thought. And so, cause like audio obviously is a really big part of VR. Like we've been concentrating on the visual stimuli, but, actually using music to change people's time perception is really interesting. So let's do a small recap. We talked about cognitive load, and the more involved a process is, the more involved things they need to do, the longer they will perceive time to be. The more novel the music is and more happy and major key it is, then the longer they will also perceive music to be. Earlier, you were talking about Zeitgeber's, Christoph. Do you want to explain what that is?
Yes. So the idea behind Zeitgeber is it's a time cue, the external time cue. So how late is it during the day? It's rather linked to those circadian systems where you want to know if it's 12 p.m. or is it 3 a.m., you know, just so that you know if in both cases it's dark and you want to know what time is it, you can have it internally so that you feel hungry, for example, or that you look at your watch and then your watch is giving you the exact time. Now, we can use that in virtual reality because we have a unique way of controlling basically everything in virtual reality, including the most common cue that is the sun. The concept of virtual sun is as old as the computer games are with any graphics, because you have it since the beginning that you want to have this cue in the game to inform you about the time. Now, before this podcast, we were discussing about ideas, and we had as an example Altspace. And then you have a meeting in Altspace. How can you use those cues? Now, you can use it to avoid time dilation and give the exact time or passing of the meeting. So let's say you have those organized meetings in Altspace and then you want to know how late is it. Now, instead of breaking the presence with some sort of watch in, I don't know, fantasy world, you just give a sun that is passing through the whole day in 90 minutes. Now you can also distort someone's time perception by giving those cues. I didn't really thought about that yet, but that's a possibility. Now, there are three types of Zeitgebers. One, the first one is natural, just like the sun. So the things that come from the environment, like our daily environment. The second one would be artificial. So basically anything that human created, so technology, like clocks and alarm clocks. And the last one is social. So you have some sort of social interactions or social behavior. Like, let's say, if I walk on Sunday morning in Osnabrück, where I live, I will know that it's a Sunday morning because no one's on the street, but it's already, I see already sun. So I know that it has to be before 10 a.m. Mm-hmm.
I have a question. We've been talking a lot about extending the actual time that you perceive from the real time. How about the opposite, where you're actually in there for much longer than you think? Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. I just answered my own question. there actually is research that of the question of I was about to ask of how do you shorten the length of time that you think you're in there? And they've done that actually on chemotherapy patients, right? This was back in like early 2000, like 2005 and 2007, where they had chemotherapy patients sit while they're having their treatment, and they're essentially placed into some kind of a proprietary VR, like one of these older research grade ones, with 30 degrees of field of view, and or they're not that amazing. But
we actually have the model that they used in office.
Oh, do you really? What do you think about that? Or how do you think they function?
Looks funky.
They look funky.
Yeah, but that's the only cool thing about them.
At least it got us to where we are now, that we can actually,
true,
use their data, and we can still reference them. One of the things I was looking at, they were looking at women receiving chemotherapy. And the conclusion is that the distraction intervention decreased symptoms, distress was well received. And however, like they actually didn't feel much less pain during the condition, which I think is due to the actual system or maybe what they were actually doing in there, because there's actually a lot of research about VR and pain therapy. There's even already companies that are involved or just really interested in doing
that. Oh, yeah. Our company, for example, that we are employed at, is exactly developing such a thing that you can listen upon on one of the previous episodes.
Do you want to link that, or what's it called, Peter?
The episode was with Thomas Schüler, where he spoke about the medical usage for VR, and there he also explained that we are developing exactly an app to modulate chronic pain perception.
Feeling the chronic pain.
Yeah, the feeling of chronic pain, and I mean, you need to make sure that the subjects the customers, the subjects, whatever, the patients are actually performing some tasks that might involve the presence of pain, but they need to ignore it. And for that, the task has to be fun and also don't feel like an eternity, right?
It's episode 4.
Yeah, episode 4, actually.
I think we'll probably revisit that episode later down the line when there is more work done in that field. It's an ongoing process, this. But there was a funny result, actually, or some kind of interaction effects that I didn't expect. So they were looking at also different cancer patients and their time estimation. And they found that lung cancer patients, they almost had no significant difference between real time and perceived time. But then breast cancer patients actually had a 20-minute difference between. So the real time was 60 minutes and their perceived time was 40 minutes. And that's a truly significant result. And so, I mean, I was trying to think of what's the actual reason for this. I actually don't even have the full access to the paper because they're behind all these paywalls. That's honestly one big thing that really pisses me off about research is when they, like, you do all this great work and then it's not going to contribute to the overall knowledge of humans because it's behind stupid paywalls.
I'd say that's a podcast by itself, not just one episode, but the whole podcast.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was thinking, you know, some kind of a you know, experience effect of like, okay, I'm not, if you're not as experienced in video games and, you know, just basically being active in another world, then you probably will perceive time to be a lot more different than having more experience playing video games. But it seems that, I don't know, the...
Well, it was 2011, and if you have a cancer, you're probably not a young person.
Yeah, especially with lung part, breast cancer and lung cancer.
Exactly.
Kind of. Mostly not, no.
So,
but there are unfortunately some young people that are especially getting, I think, blood cancer, and certain types of cancer are also quite common among very young people.
But also
now,
sorry to kind of intervene, but also on this effect, there's been some other interesting anecdotes from The Void, the virtual reality kind of warehouse room with, or multiple rooms that you can actually wear a laptop backpack and use their own proprietary HMDs and have a full one-to-one environment that you're walking in and doing things. And they also, or at least I saw somewhere on Twitter that they were saying that people felt that they were in there for a lot shorter than they actually were. So I don't how do you make the difference between making something feel longer versus making something feel actually much shorter than it is?
Good question.
Right? Like, can you guys point to like a certain direction with that?
Wouldn't that be a similar situation as with the falling from the building? So that during the event, it feels like much longer than...
Well, no, that's the original thing we were talking about. Yeah, that's positive gain rather than, let's call it, like negative gain. I don't know. I don't think the research really points to specific specific like conditions that they're experiencing that's making the time feel shorter. Or maybe I just haven't read that far into it yet. Like we said, that this time perception is still such a new and, or at least unexplored field that we're still trying to understand how it's working.
Well, maybe not related to that, but I have two more cues or two more methods with which you can change the length of the perceived length of the experience. The first one is sort of a context of the experience. In case of virtual reality, that would be a difference between doing virtual reality for absolutely the first time in your life versus doing this 8 hours a day.
Yes.
So now, for example, an experience of Karl Kranz, the organizer of SVVR, that he described during his interview on Voices of VR, when he was saying that he thought that he played for 3 hours, but in fact he was playing 12 hours.
That's a major
comes
jump.
From sort exactly comes sort of from different sources or from different cues than a person who just played for the first time virtual reality at some conference, and then he had only 5 minutes, but it felt like
eternity.
Just a few seconds.
Yeah. Or a few seconds.
I mean, the conference experiences are never ideal because even though you're wearing nice headphones, you still hear so much from around you, and that always detracts from immersion, from the experience. And I mean, I can honestly say I haven't really felt much time dilation in VR. Maybe that's because I haven't been asked it or, you know, written it down rather than actually feel it. But like, I've never taken it off and then looked at the time and been like, whoa, like so much time has passed, like 12 hours, you know, what Carl is saying, like, that's a 6 hour difference, 12 to...
No, that was nine hours difference.
Do you know what actually he was playing or doing in there? Did he talk about that?
Fantastic contraption, if I'm not mistaken.
So that's a pretty... Let's think about that, actually, because it's not something you just sit back and, like, watch, right? It's a pretty involved game.
No. That was extremely interactive content. That was extremely interactive game with a lot of creativity and thinking on your side.
Yes, and...
And then actually having this effect that you wrote recently on the Medium about, which is why the physics is so fascinating to us. So in Fantastic Contraption, you're building your own structure sort of thing that is going to throw a ball or something, and then certain flow of events is going to happen, and then you press play and then something happens, and then you have this participation
and
anticipation effect.
And not only that, but there isn't really a timer or per se in the game, from what I don't know. So there is a lot of time for you to sit and think about what you're creating until you press play. So
yeah,
I guess that could even be a thing where the setup and the build up of things within the experience, if that doesn't really have real time constitutes within the game itself, you know, there's no rush to do something, that probably will affect your time perception.
And the last cue for today that I'd like to mention is segmentation of the experience. So let's just compare the Eve Gunchak to Eve Valkyr. So in Eve Gunchak, you have those sort of short missions where you're there for 5 to 10 minutes and then you're done. Mm-hmm. And then you have another mission. So you have a pause, you can go, I don't know, to pee or something without breaking the context of the game, like the flow of the game. And then if in Eve Valkyr, you have those 20-minute matches or so, or you could have 20-minute matches where you can't pause it, and then it feels differently.
I mean, from an anecdotal perspective, like, would you say you've felt different time dilations from each game? Because
So for me, the better example would be Eve Gunchak versus Anshar Wars 2. So in Anshar Wars 2, you have this long missions that take around 10 to 20 minutes, depending how many times you die. And then, well, I actually had a time dilation with Anshar Wars when I thought that I played much shorter. No, I thought that I played much longer, but I was actually playing much shorter because the game was just so annoying that I was dying so often. So I thought that I was playing like for an hour, and then it turned out that it was just 15 minutes.
Yeah.
While with Eve Gunchak, I had the opposite effect. But then again, it was shorter and I was much more successful. So there are a lot of interferences to judge here.
Yeah, and I think we're definitely going to come back to the subject once. I think since today, the Vive actually launched, right? It's April 5th, and last week we had Oculus Rift. So there's going to be a lot more data points, I'd say, that we're going to be coming out. Maybe in terms of anecdotes, but compiling those anecdotes into something coherent, I think, could be definitely something really interesting to look back at. So we'll come back to the subject for sure. We just wanted to lay out the groundwork for people that are interested in this field and thinking about how they're going to be incorporating these phenomena into their experiences. So we want to give you all the tools and the framework for you to build upon. And essentially, in the end, it's going to be aiding just the research efforts and just the overall human knowledge and understanding of how the hell we work. And time is obviously like such a big factor in what we do. And so we hope you like this episode. Next episode, we're actually probably going to have another interview one with Jeffrey Scoe from Fishbowl VR, who does, if you've ever heard about kind of like usertesting.com, where essentially you can submit something that needs to get crowdsourced, tested by just people all around the world. It's essentially that for VR. We really like his effort, and so we'll be speaking to him about his project. So thanks again for tuning into another episode of Research VR. Topic suggestions, guest invites, and all other feedback are very helpful. Feel free to contact us under researchvrcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter at researchvrcast. You can find us all individually on Twitter at AzadUX, that's me, or at Izdebski_RodeoR, or at Raziello.
Raziello.
Rate us on iTunes and help spread the podcast that way. And special thanks.
Here I was thinking it was my name that was difficult.
We all have great names. Come on, guys.
Special thanks to Nerses Valavanian for the intro and outro music. You can find his music at soundcloud.com/Nerses-Balabanian. That's my father, actually. He likes to make music, and I think the last episode sounded a lot better with the music. So
yes, it did. But it's not the one that it's not the us who should judge. If you have any comments, just Twitter on Twitter on our Twitter.
Tweet us at our Twitter.
Just so like that we can read those tweets and retweet them.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's have a retweet circle jerk. Yeah.
All right, guys. I'll see you guys later. We'll see. We'll talk or hopefully hang out in Altspace. Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.